Hmm? Ah! Hmm.
Hey everybody, welcome to the podcast. My name is Alex.
And I'm Lizzie, and this is What Is From Podcast, episode 3.
Episode 3. In this episode, we're going to be covering season 1, episode 3, Choosing Day.
Choosing Day.
Choosing Day.
Yep.
Our little family has gone from scared out of their minds to making decisions.
Yeah.
What are some of your first thoughts about this episode?
I am getting further acquainted with what's going on and mm-hmm. where we are. I mean, we get an opening night tour of Colony House, and my friend Lisa, who is watching the show, she was like, I turned it off right then. I'm like, what are you talking about? She's like, the orgy? I'm like, orgy? And she's like, yes, how could you miss it? I'm like, I saw some people having sex, but I didn't think it was an orgy. I mean, those were not the choices I would have made, but it's TV.
Well, you know what's interesting about what you said? I mean, I'm a little taken aback because they have a lot more liberties than even AMC does, or definitely Network has. There's a lot more vulgarity, and they can show a lot more things than regular TV.
I think because they are a subscription versus you have to get to AMC Plus to become a subscription.
Mm-hmm.
And who just said fucking not too long ago? Was it Maggie?
It was a lot. Oh, Boyd.
No. On The Walking Dead.
Oh, yeah, because they only have so many F-bombs that they can do.
Yeah, and, you know, I honestly, I really don't want to hear all that crap.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can't, and trust me, no one drops more bombs than me. Well, that's not true. Some days, no one drops more bombs than me. But I don't know. I don't want to hear that all the time. Sometimes it's like, oh my God, my teacher's ears, they just get so assaulted. But other times I'm just like, well, I'm not going to say it. You're right. I just was like, oh, this is going to sound goofy, but you know, the lady in the beginning, and I'm like, oh my God, her back goes right into her bum. I mean, yeah. There's no bum, you know what I mean? And I'm like,
absolutely. Oh,
I don't see a lot of bums in my life, you know, like in every day. So it's just kind of like, oh, maybe I'm just an old lady, I don't know. But I just noticed that there was some acceptance of their fate,
right?
And that's, you know, as far as the family goes, you know, everybody else has, I don't even want to call it settled in, because everyone is on edge constantly. No one is relaxed.
Right.
But
well, there's one person, but we're going to get to that in a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think, you know, that's one of the themes of this episode, is just accepting your fate. What did you think?
You know, I think that it was a very interesting juxtaposition between the main characters. You had Sheriff Boyd, who was going through his own struggles. Frank, who was going through his own struggles. The whole Matthews family, which was going through their own struggles, which we're going to talk about. And you've got Kenny and his mom. So, and then of course, Jade, but my first impression of the whole entire, episode was You're right, acceptance, but also how do you fit in this world?
Yeah.
And how does it, how long does it take you to fit into this world?
Yeah.
But, you know, that said, we're going to get into all the particulars. Why don't you, since you're the queen of the podcast, why don't you go first?
Certainly, Lord Baelish.
Absolutely.
All right, I'm going to start with my first point, which is a Jade / Julie kind of juxtaposition. I love saying the word. I mean, I love using that word, can't always say it. But anyway, you know, we are talking about acceptance of fate. And what I'm seeing here is the yin and the yang between Jade and Julie. Julie, it's like sinking in. Something's wrong. I'm in a place that I don't feel good. I'm not in a place where I understand, and I'm stuck. And she's not happy about it, you know? And at the moment, her entire family is at Colony House. And so they're camping out that first night there. And then, you know, and she's just, she doesn't want her dad going through her stuff. And she, I think because she's in this house, just in a room, like in a common room, she doesn't feel like she has a space of her own. And she doesn't feel like maybe safe, you know, at least when she's in the RV with the family, she knows her place in that world. And, you know, she can move around and understand where she's going to be.
I think in this world right now, she doesn't have a voice at all.
Yeah, she doesn't have a voice. That's the other thing.
Her parents are trying to protect her.
Yeah.
But she's old enough to know better, so to speak. But she's young enough to do a lot of stupid things and probably still want her parents.
Yeah.
And I think that her situation, more than anybody, I could see throughout the whole entire episode that the choices that she made at the end weren't unwarranted for a kid that age and what they did to her.
Yeah.
She was just rebelling because she could.
Yeah. That she could make her own choice.
Right. It's like the first time in this whole 24, 48 hour period where she had an actual voice, and also people valued her opinion.
Yeah.
I mean, Fatima and I mean, went out of her way to be as friendly and as
caring,
you know, I mean,
and kind.
I just remember her on the porch and she said, Fatima said, are you okay? And she broke down and said, no, I'm not.
Yeah.
I mean, that must have taken a lot of courage to do.
Yeah, to just be honest about something. And, you know, who among us wouldn't be in that same position if that was us?
Absolutely.
I mean you're trapped.
She has got to deal with being a teenager in this world, mm-hmm. as well as having her parents there. And, I mean, you can say what you want about Colony House. It's a lot more fun there.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's always an up and a downside to something like that, too.
Right now, it looks like the place to be.
Okay.
I mean, for her.
I mean, yeah, maybe. I mean, I don't know that she wants in on all the other stuff.
Well, she doesn't know what she doesn't know. All she knows is she's got a friend in Fatima.
Yeah.
And she knows what she does. She knows. I mean, she had they didn't give her the opportunity to go to the house. So
no,
because
because she wanted to go and
she didn't. Now, they could have handled that a lot better. But the fact is, because she didn't go, they kept squelling her. You need to watch your brother. Da 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 da.
Yeah.
And it made the choice of going to Colin or staying at Colony House, I think, really easy.
Yeah, I think it did. I totally agree. And then on the flip side of that, you've got Jade, who is thinking he's accepting his fate, but he's not at all, because all of this seems so fantastical to him that he thinks it has to be an escape room game that Toby set up, which, you know, just kind of tells us Toby was like his manservant and would do stuff like this. And, you know, Jade is wealthy enough that price is no, you know, problem. Whatever it costs, if it's going to be a good time.
Absolutely.
And so he doesn't have a problem with that at all. And in fact, you know, like, he comes out of Colony House and he steals the bike from the girl who can't act,
right,
and takes off on the bike, you know, and, you know, he's riding all over town. He, you know, it's not even,
and then
like
he was complaining. He was complaining it wasn't motorized.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know, that it wasn't everything, because he's looking at this and he's like, oh my God, these people are really, you know, they really play this game. Like, they really play their parts, and there's no crack in the seams in this at all. And, you know, it's not, he's the one that's not fitting in with everybody else, because he thinks everyone is there for his amusement.
Absolutely.
Like, he
yes.
goes to the diner to get breakfast and he's looking around and he's like, wow, this is really cool. All these people standing in line to get breakfast. And of course I'm paying all of you, so I'm just going to go to the front of the line. And then,
and
he's,
I
like,
love what he said. He's like, hello, everybody. And he does this whole thing. Oh, I did some summer stock in the, you know, and I love that the Kenny's mom just hits him with the spatula or the whatever and starts yelling at him in
Vietnamese
and just starts railing him. He's like, okay.
Yeah. Like, I mean, these people aren't breaking character at all as far as he's concerned, you know? And even when he goes down into that root cellar.
Hello.
Yeah. And he sees the guy. I couldn't totally tell, but it looked like the guy was squished under a rock.
I don't know what he was. I mean, I tried to freeze frame it, but he was in that corner and he turned his head with the blood and the whatever.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the ways the victims look is that the blood is coming from their eyes. So he must have been a victim. Maybe he was one of the people before they got the talisman.
Right.
He was hiding down there and somehow got, you know, maybe got chowed and then trapped under the rock, you know, maybe at the same time or whatever. Or maybe they pushed the rock, ate him, and then let the rock roll right on top of him. But then he, you know, it scares the crap out of Jade. He falls back on the ground and he's looking up and there's this red symbol.
It kind of looks like a hand, but it doesn't. I mean, it's weird. It's like, I know I'm going to try to freeze frame it.
Yeah.
To put it up. But, you know, it's an interesting thing because he's scared out of his mind.
Yeah.
For like a minute. And then he's like cracking up like, this is awesome.
Yeah. Because it's not real.
And okay.
And then
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, I just have one problem with the whole scene.
Yeah.
Close the freaking door.
Oh, when he left?
I know. Maybe I know. That's just me. It's like all the creepy creepies are there. Close that door.
But it's not real.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
I know.
If it was real, he probably would have closed the door. My problem was like, you're going down into a hole and there's two doors that could open it and you leave one of them closed.
Right.
I was like, I would have opened both of them.
I wouldn't have gone down there. That was my first thing.
Yeah, I would not have gone down either. Not by myself, you know.
I love how he tells Kenny, do you have something for me? Do you have a clue? And Kenny's like, no, I don't know what you're talking about. But I will say he does ask a very important question. Okay, this is all good, but you have a couple of holes in your theory
story,
here.
Yeah.
Where do you get the eggs? And where do you get the cows?
Yeah.
And I love Kenny's like, we don't really know. They just kind of appear.
Yeah, they have chickens and cows, but they don't know where they're coming from, which that's an important clue for the town that I wrote down, because we know that Sarah and Nathan are taking care of some animals. So maybe when a cow shows up,
that's where they go.
They go, you know, Nathan comes down and grabs them and brings them back up to the barn. You see little Nathan with his like farmer overalls.
Yep.
And I, you know, that's an important clue for the town, because here we are wondering about food. And even Julie asked Fatima about food. And, you know, Fatima says, you know, the supermarkets around here, you know, are not so great.
Right.
And then Julie's like, huh? Oh, you know, because Julie commented, you guys, you know, plant your own food. They don't have much of a choice.
Absolutely.
So if they've got the means to plant, then they have to.
Well, they're doing the best they can with what they have. And yeah. I love when Jade actually woke up, because he's all belted up and Donna comes barreling in and she's just like, shut the bleep up. And of course, Jade has to have his pompous attitude. You know, you don't know who I am. And of course, I love her response. Oh, shit, you're one of those.
Yeah.
I mean, it just doesn't get any better than that. And I mean, it just goes to show you she's been around enough that, you know, she's seen all kinds of people and the way they react.
Yeah.
So I just, like you said, I think Jade stole the show in this episode by his comic relief, whether it was the bike or, you know, the coffee house.
Yeah.
But everything. I think the worst part of when Jade was when the guy went in the box, when Frank went in the box and he was just clapping his hands and doing it, you know, just all happy and like he was at a comedy show. And then Kenny pulls him aside and finally sets him straight. But it was a nice comic relief for this tense world.
We'll be right back.
Ever wondered what it takes to make it in the movie business? Peel back the curtain with 4/6 Success Filmmaking. 4/6 Success Filmmaking is where filmmakers share their stories and the secrets.
It's beyond competitive out there.
There have been movies that it's taken me 10 years to get made.
Don't wait to create. Like, you've got to just keep making stuff.
Tune in to 4/6 Success Filmmaking for your dose of cinematic realness, direct from the voices that have lived it.
Yeah, that's all. Yeah, that was the point. And it's the last of the comic relief.
Right.
You know, this is serious stuff. And what I like is that they're not being one note about this. They have this guy that is out there who is spoiled rotten, but he's a genius, or at least because, you know, he's like a tech giant. So we know he's got some kind of creative ability that has garnered him a fortune.
Right.
So it's, you know, like when you're talking about Gilligan's Island and you've got the millionaire and his wife and the scientist, mm-hmm. We need a scientist, you know,
somebody's got to figure something out. So,
yeah,
I mean, with this particular group of people, new people, they've got Jade. And then they also have
Jim,
who's a engineer. So they've got two good pieces.
Actually got a lot more than what would ever be expected in that situation.
True.
You know, like if I was limited to what was on my street, I wouldn't have that, you know, and there's like, I don't know, 10, 20 houses on my street.
There you go.
And I wouldn't have an engineer on the street. So, all right. So what is your second point?
Well,
what's your first point?
You know, I had Jade up there, but my first point is Sheriff Boyd.
Okay.
And the story that he had in this episode. You know, he starts out through this whole series, through the first three episodes, he needs a Xanax. I mean, the guy is just so wound up so tight. And he's made this decision to make the box. You know, now it's time to work with Frank. And yeah. he's doing everything he can to make this work. So he asks Frank, do you want a good meal? Do you want to see anybody? He wants to go in, into the woods where he used to play with his daughter. On a little side note of that, I thought it was really interesting that Sheriff Boyd was respected by everybody. And I think it was really interesting how Frank had pointed out that his wife really respected him for trying to uphold order in the place.
Yeah.
And I think in the end, you know, Sheriff Boyd is trying to do whatever he can to get himself out of this.
He's not the kind of guy that's going to leave alone necessarily either.
Right.
Like what he does, he always does for other people.
And I mean, he even tried to tell Frank, listen, there's a cabin at the edge of the area. Go there, go live your life, whatever.
Yeah.
What I also find really interesting is when he went to go see the priest. And when he got to see Father, he's in the church and Father is like, listen, you are the last person I would see here. And he's like, I've been praying and praying and I can't come up with a good thing. And he gives him something interesting, which I find that it just goes to show you the order of things. I believe he says you created a guillotine, so you have to learn how to use it.
Yeah.
And I think that that's an important point. And I love his response. You know, he tells Father, you're a lousy fucking priest. You know, it's like, aren't you supposed to be here for redemption and give people a second chance? And, you know, that's the answer that he gives them. You got to kill Frank. And, you know, that's the best you can do. So
right.
I think that Sheriff Boyd is really just trying to keep order. I know there's a rift between the town versus Colony House. I think that he's trying to make this as painless as possible, especially during the choosing ceremony with Julie. And Donna is definitely not making it easy.
I think Donna just wants people to be respected for their choices.
True.
And, you know, when the parents are like, no, you have to stay with us. We have to stick together. Donna is saying she made her choice. Respect the choice, you know, and it could be that it's some kind of residual stuff.
Yeah, obviously, there's probably something more going on.
Yeah, you know, that for whatever reason, like she chose to run instead of die with her sister.
Right.
So that could be it. Like they're all dealing. And since you're on Frank and Boyd,
right.
They were my number four, but I'm going to bump them up to number two, if that's okay.
Sure.
All right. So when I was talking about the two sides with Jade and Julie, there's also two sides going on between Frank and Boyd, because Frank is resigned to his fate.
Yes, he is.
He's like, I screwed up. You know, like one of his first questions was, you know, can you bury me next to my family? And, you know, when they're out in the woods and they're at that rope swing, he's got his hands on the rope and he's putting his head against it. And, you know, Boyd turns his back almost like, if Frank does it here, I don't have to put him in the box.
Right.
Because Frank only built that box as a deterrent.
Absolutely.
Not for anything else. He never wanted to have to use it. And so he turned his back, possibly hoping that Frank would hang himself. And then there would be nothing that Boyd could do. It would be Frank's choice. And Frank doesn't do that. Instead, Frank is just like, I'm ready. You know, I want to go in the box, you know, that's what I'm going to do. He doesn't need a last meal. He doesn't take the life raft that Boyd gives him. He's resigned to his fate and to pay his bill, basically. And Boyd wakes up and his hand is shaking, which, you know, the symbolism would be unsteady. You know, he's wavering. He doesn't know what to do, or he's not at peace with his decision. You know, built the box so that people would follow the rules and not want to be left in that box. And he never expected to use it. But Frank couldn't handle the predicament that he and his family were in. And Frank broke the rules and his family was killed.
Yep. And he is accepting his fate.
Yeah.
More than Boyd is. But, you know, in this world, there's laws and people are going to abide by them despite Boyd's hesitancy. And I think it's something to be commended.
Oh, okay. That's yeah. Okay. I mean, the savagery of putting him in that box and letting him be ripped to shreds by monsters, right?
The and thought then, of it was bad. And then when they showed it, it was worse.
Oh my gosh, yeah, it was. Like he's sitting there, Frank's sitting there waiting for it to happen. And then we start to see the faces and, you know, them looking through the slats. And then all of a sudden they're like, whew, they break through. And that's the end of, you know, that we didn't have to see Frank get ripped to shreds, which was great. But, you know, you can't impose such a stiff fine and never expect that someone won't have to pay it. You have to be willing to exact that toll if you're going to put it out there.
Absolutely. The bill is always due. The bill is always due.
Yeah.
And I think with Frank and Sheriff Boyd, they worked it out in their own way. I mean, unfortunately, Sheriff Boyd is carrying a lot of emotional luggage. It's not even baggage anymore. It's got wheels and whatever else. And it's because he's been trying to do a good job and do the right thing for this town. And, you know, Frank has his skeletons in his closet, which are, he said, I wasn't always this guy. I wasn't always this guy before this happened. And this thing put me on a spiral that I just don't like to say. And I put my family in jeopardy and I had the consequences and this is what I did.
Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine at all. You know, he's talking about the last Christmas that they spent together and how, you know, Megan's face lit up at the dollhouse. And that's probably what did him in. He probably thought about that so much and that's what drove him to drink and, you know, just giving up.
Well, it's hard when you're a parent and you can't provide.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, whether it's
protection,
food. Whatever. And I know with my own daughter, it's like, there's certain things that she may need or want that we may not be able to give her. And it's crushing sometimes.
Yeah.
But you do the best you can and you hope that it's all for the best. But when you're in that type of situation, I don't know how. The fact that they're all not drunk is amazing.
I mean, there's definitely people that go into that bar. It's not jam packed, but it's definitely something that gets used.
I'm not a huge drinker at all, but I'll tell you, I think I'd become one just for lack of.
Just to escape.
Just to escape. Because if you know, I wish I had Jade's attitude.
Yeah.
I mean, ignorance is bliss sometimes.
Yeah, but, it truly is.
You know,
it truly is.
I think, did you have anything else on Sheriff? I mean, I know I was talking,
no,
it was my point.
I mean, there's all sorts of stuff.
Unless you wanted to start your next point.
Well, that was my number two.
Okay.
So what's your number two?
Well, I just went, so it's your turn.
Oh, okay. So let me look, because my number.
I got you all screwed up, huh?
Yeah, yeah. I shouldn't just number them, but all right. So my number three is going to be. Oh, okay. My number three is going to be Victor. Well, actually, yeah. It's just quick. Okay.
That's fine. We could talk.
I don't
Victor.
Know if I. Well, no. My number three is going to be a combo of Ethan and Victor.
Yeah, that's what I actually had that as the point. So that's perfect.
All right. So this will be our number three.
Sure.
So we see Victor and he's marking, he's got paper, and you can tell by his actions that he's looking at some kind of a map, because right. he's counting steps and checking to see if the tree's moved, you know? And so he and Ethan are becoming tied together, because Ethan sees the little boy dressed all in white. And last episode, you know, he just looked out the window and the kid was there.
Right. And he's like, hi.
Yeah. And then this episode, he's still there. And Ethan waves to him and the kid waves back. So it's something that's at least interactive and acknowledges the fact that Ethan is there. So Ethan being a little kid, and forgive me, but I'm a little jaded when it comes to little kid actors, because I deal with them. This kid is super cute, but part of it, I just feel, is just played up too much and it bugs me. Okay. But I'm sure he's probably still super cute in real life. But at any rate, once Ethan tells Victor that he is friends with this boy, and Victor knows who the boy is.
That was what I wanted to point out. Victor, and it's funny that Ethan told him and he didn't tell anybody else. And yeah. he happened to tell the one person that knows the little boy in some way.
Yeah. I mean, he doesn't mention it to his family, his sister, to anyone in Colony House, nothing. He goes outside and he starts talking to Victor. And it's like a typical little kid slash little boy thing to do, to go out and start talking to some guy that's doing something. Like, what right. are you doing? That looks interesting. And
but you notice how Victor was like kind of like a little kid.
Yeah, definitely. Almost like how kids can be a little standoffish at first when they first meet.
Yeah, I don't want you to talk to me because I won't get my peaches.
Or yeah, because you could ruin things for me.
Right.
And you know, he doesn't want that. But as soon as Ethan mentions that he's friends with this little kid, Victor is like, tell him I said hello. And Victor knows exactly who it is.
But what was interesting is about that, in I think the last episode, the kid in white went shh. And I think that's the only reason why he didn't say anything to anybody.
Maybe.
But again, why would he say something to Victor and nobody else? You know, I guess it's for drama.
Because he came out. Victor was standing in the area that the kid was standing in.
True. That makes more sense now.
And so he was like, hey, did you see that kid? You know, he's been standing out here all morning. And Victor's like, no. But I think that kid is Victor.
Who knows?
That's what I think it is. I think that somehow Victor is existing in two different times. I don't know what to call it.
Okay.
But he's coexisting with himself.
Now, I know I have not seen Lost, but uh-huh. from what I understand, that is not out of the realm of possibility.
For Lost, yeah.
My wife would tell me, just when you think it got crazy, it would get even more crazy.
It would. Like, I remember when Locke found the hatch, and that was the end of season two, I think it was. And, you know, season three, we open up to Desmond down in the hatch, and we're like, what's going on down here? You know, and just being excited. And that was the problem with Lost, is that you would get so excited to find out something and they would slowly unravel. And then there'd be this entire color of yarn that would just disappear with no explanation. And they never went back to it. So you never knew what happened.
That's not fun.
No, it wasn't. And I think that Lost has served as a very important lesson for all these shows that are world building and storytelling, because it's been such a major bone of contention among people that watch and love and enjoy television, that you have to answer the questions. You can't continuously put those mysteries out there and just leave them, because the difference between television and life is that in television or in movies or whatever, we have the ability to close the circle, and people want and need that. In life, everything can be open-ended and there's nothing you can do about
right.
it, you know?
Well, I'm just still wondering on a completely side tangent, where are the kids in Fear?
Don't even get me started.
I know. Oh, I just couldn't resist. I couldn't resist.
Yeah.
But, to that excellent point, that was the one thing that my wife did complain about.
Yeah.
Was the same exact point, was that you start a great storyline and you just don't finish it. And there was no payoff.
Yeah.
It's like we invested all this time and effort into it for nothing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, in terms of the Ethan Victor conversation, I thought that was it may come back to be an important conversation. Watch enough of these shows.
It's important in that it's the start of their relationship and their understanding. That's why it's important.
Well, there might be something with the trees. Who knows?
Yeah,
or it's just a bunch of craziness.
Well,
I think Ethan has an interesting take because he's a boy. You know, he's a lot more trusting. He kind of feels scared but accepted, you know, when he gets his crutch.
Yeah.
You know, Julie's like, why are you being so kind? And he's just like loving it because why? Somebody's helping him out and he's a friend now.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the way kids are.
Just another friend. And plus, like, it exemplifies what Colony House is about. You know, like, I can make you a crutch, so I'm going to make you a crutch. You know, we all coexist here. And, you know, that's what we do here. Not that I think that the town is cutthroat. I don't think that it is. But I do think that there's a level of acceptance and closeness at Colony House that the town doesn't have. Like, everyone goes into their separate little houses down in the town. Everyone in the colony is like, what's mine is yours,
right?
And
I will say, and I go back to this, I said this last podcast,
yeah,
the lenses or the filters on the cameras from Colony House versus the town, two totally different filters.
Yeah,
you know, you've got the blue and the coldness of the town,
yeah,
versus the warmness of Colony House. Now, that could be all smoke and mirrors, but, you know, we've seen that in a lot of different shows that we've watched.
Yeah.
But at least right now, the true colors are Colony House is a community that's loving to each other, where the town is caring for each other, but they're just trying to survive.
Yeah, they're coexisting.
In the old world, they're trying to create the old world in this world.
Yeah.
Where Colony House is trying to work together for a common goal, which is to protect each other.
Yeah.
Not that's actually kind of, I mean, because they're under all one roof.
Yeah.
And the town has their own individual homes. So that's why I say it's more communal in that way. But I think it's more, I think the town is more communal just for the fact that the diner is where everybody eats, you know,
yeah.
So they have their community. It's just two different governments, so to speak.
Yeah. Two different. Yeah. They're like countries side by side. All right. So was that that was your number three?
That
also,
was you.
Right?
That was you. Yeah. Okay. That was kind of both of ours. Yeah. I mean,
okay.
you said pretty much everything that I was thinking about that Victor and Ethan topic. So what's your next one?
Choosing Day.
Okay, we can go to Choosing Day.
All right, so I thought that it was kind of crazy that they have this formal ceremony to decide where they're going to live. And basically the town is you live by the rules for the good of the community, and Colony House is you live for today because tomorrow is not guaranteed. So there's this, it looks like the top of a sarcophagus up in the cemetery that they've placed rocks and flowers.
Right.
And so the stone represents the town. The Correct. Flower represents Colony House. And I was just like, all right, so what do we know about stones, rocks, that sort of thing?
They're what solid. Do we know?
They're solid.
They're hard to break.
They can be hard to break.
They can be hard to break. You know, a lot of them together can create a strong bond.
Yep.
What else am I missing here?
Well, I mean, they are part of a cycle. There's a rock cycle in nature. Okay. But basically, like, it's what you said. You put enough of them together, you can create some kind of barrier, right?
Right.
So you can get protection from the rock. You can throw a rock at someone and hurt them, you know?
Correct.
And then what about a flower?
You know, it's delicate, but it's a living thing.
Yep.
It's vibrant. It's life.
Yeah.
It can reproduce. It's just a very, it's hope.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's hope. It's fragile. It's fleeting. Like, I have these flowers in front of my house. They bloom for one day. That's it.
What flower is it?
Oh, some purple flower. I saved the tag. I bought them. I had them when I was in Florida, and they survived year round, but it didn't get as cold as it does here. So I planted them last year at my house, and they just were so amazing, and they attract hummingbirds. And then they died because we had a couple of freezes. So, you know, then I finally found the plant again. I don't know what the name of it is. And I made sure to save the tag, and I put it someplace safe. I didn't
so
commit
safe
it
that
to
you
memory.
Can't find it?
Well, no, I know where it is, but it's at the other end of the house. So I'm not going to go get it now.
Uh-huh.
But it's just this purple fluted flower, and I love it. It blooms for one day, and that's it. And so I was like, all right. So Colony House accepts that life is just a season and then can just go away. The people in the town are like, no, we're going to fight to live as long as we possibly can. You know, it's not like our season in the sun type thing. You know, we're going to abide by these rigid rules, and we're going to survive, and we're going to go home.
Well, I think that's something that's very interesting. I think the people in the town believe that they're going to go home, where the people in Colony House believe that they're just going to live their life here.
There, yeah.
And you know what?
They've accepted it.
They've accepted it to a point. If something does come about that they do go home, that's great. But,
yeah,
you know, they're living life within the confines of their life here.
Yep.
And because of that, they're not as stressed out. Now, are they still stressed out? Yes. But you just look at the people, you know, when Jade cut the line, they just all look.
Yeah. Just,
they're done. Versus the other group where they're done too, but they're just kind of living life and doing their thing.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly it. So what is your fourth point?
My fourth point is Jim and Tabitha, when they start the show, Tabitha is talking to Ethan about getting the clothes, and his pajamas are itchy. And then Jim comes and he gets the stuff and he gets his books. Yeah. And he starts doing the flight of the
Kroppenhengel.
Yeah. And then he starts becoming one, and it was just a nice release. Of course, Julie wants no part of it, but whatever.
Yeah.
And I think the biggest difference between Jim and Tabitha was after they saw the house, she's still not on board with where they are. And
Tabitha?
Jim, yeah.
You think she wants to be in?
No, I don't think she's on board with
them being stuck there.
Yes. And
who would get on board with that?
But my point being is, you know, they said to Father, well, why is everybody so calm? Well, you've learned to accept it. Also, you know, Jim said something interesting. He's like, listen, I heard those creatures talking in the RV. So it didn't get any more real than that for me. If this is what's going to keep us safe, you know what? Then I'm doing it. Because right. I saw firsthand how it happened. They, you know, Tabitha and Julie really didn't see the...
Well, no, I disagree, because Julie, when the episode opens, Julie's dreaming about the monsters on the porch coming at them.
True, but I mean, that's Julie, but Tabitha kind of... Oh, yeah, it was Tabitha, I think. But... you know, Tabitha's still kind of in a little denial now.
Oh, she totally is.
But in her defense, they go to this house.
Yeah.
They didn't even have a chance to clean the place up, and it's got blood all over the place. Like, come on. You're not That's doing a good sales job.
That's what I don't understand. I'm like, did they do that to shock them into following
the I was thinking the same thing. Like, were they doing that to show them, or were they doing that because there just wasn't time?
Yeah. I mean, it was pretty close. Megan and Lauren are being buried the morning.
The day they come in.
Yeah, they're driving through. And then they have to deal with the kid in the RV. So maybe they didn't have a chance to clean that at all.
But again, it was just kind of creepy.
They could have closed the door and made an effort.
Right. They could have done something. But of course, you know, Father's like, this is what happens when you don't follow the rules.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, this is the precautionary tale right here. So, you know, keep windows closed.
The relationship between Tabitha and Jim obviously is going to be strained due to the circumstance.
Yeah.
Even in the best relationships, it would be strained. And like most couples, they're trying to stand by each other to figure out what's going on. Jim has one way of doing it, and Tabitha has another. In Tabitha's defense, she spent more time at Colony House, so she's gotten to know them just a little bit better.
Yeah.
Where Jim has had more time with Boyd and the doctor, so to speak. Katie. You know.
Christy,
I'm sorry.
That's
and,
right.
You know, so it's understandable why they're pulled the way they are, because they're biased.
But you got to remember, too, first, I don't know, however many hours or minutes at Colony House were not the best.
Because, oh, it wasn't happy fun time at all.
Yeah. First, they're fighting to get through the door. Then they get through the door. And their hands are tied up and they're separated. And then, you know, Tabitha gets the worst conversation of her life.
Right.
You know, so I don't know. I think it's just what you're saying. It's a matter of what you know already in this strange new world that gives you a level of comfort. And I would kind of think Tabitha wouldn't be down with all the free loving going on right around her little kid. Because if you notice, there's no other little kids in that colony house.
You would think there'd be more with all the free loving, but yeah, you're right.
Yeah, like some babies or something, you know? but there's not, there isn't. Yeah, and it's interesting. No one seems to have been stuck there with an infant. And are there, I don't think there are other kids. So why, if it's some place, like at some kind of purgatory or something like that, what is it that Ethan and Julie have to come to realize? What do they need to learn in order to grow as people?
Correct.
Or is it just that the entire family was stranded there because they need to deal with the death of Thomas?
Or they need to deal with something. Yeah, that's the obvious thing.
Yeah. Because, I mean, that's their biggest shared problem,
mm-hmm.
is the death of this family member. So,
and again, we don't know all the backstories of all these people to kind of make a make an educated guess. I mean, we know Donna's story, of course.
Yeah.
We know Jade's story, of course.
Well, not really.
I mean, in the sense that...
We know, yeah, it's kind of like we know his archetype based on the way he's behaving.
Correct. But again, we don't know a lot. We only know pretty much Jade and the Matthews. So again, my point is that Jim and Tabitha are just trying to be a family unit and trying to negotiate their way through this town, and they end up picking the rock.
And they all had to pick individually. Like, one couldn't pick for everyone.
Correct.
So that was another important thing in how Julie ended up at Colony House. Because what if Ethan went to Colony House too?
Correct. And well, Tabitha wanted to switch once Julie went.
Yeah. Get in the right show.
I know, Judith. Oh, God. When Julie chose to take the flower, you know, Tabitha is trying to do the same thing. So,
yeah. She doesn't want to see them split up. And, you know, I could imagine how terrifying it would be to not have all your chicks about you when you're in this unknown and dangerous situation. Of course, you would want your kids right there with you. And Julie is taking this opportunity to strike out on her own and, you know, see what world she can.
Right.
So that's my number four.
And
what's yours?
That was the one I just did. But
we both did that together.
I know. We're you know what?
We're folks, in sync.
The problem is, folks, we just are mind readers of each other. We don't see each other's lists, but
yeah,
it is what it is. Because there's what's nice about this show is the themes are pretty much in your face. Yeah. And I mean that in a good way.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, I mean, yes, there's a lot of secrets that go on, but when you're dissecting these episodes, it's pretty easy to find the good stuff. Yes, there's little details, which every time you go back, you see, but the good stuff, once you start watching this, is pretty easy to find.
Yeah.
The other thing about Jim and Tabitha, they were told about the talismans, about the house.
Yeah.
How it all works.
Yeah.
Closing the windows with kids or bolting the windows down. You know, they just reinforced what they sort of already knew.
Or what we already know.
Yeah, what we already knew as well. But on the whole, I think Jim and Tabitha were my next one. And do you have any other points?
Well, I guess I want to drive home kind of like the theme going on in it, the acceptance of fate and, you know, what is will be. And, you know, we start near the beginning of the episode, and Kenny's mom is having a tough time dealing with the death of her husband. And, you know, she wants to go see him, but of course she can't go see him. And, you know, Kenny is trying to comfort her, and there really isn't comfort, because, I mean, these are two older people that have been married and together their whole life. And by the end of the episode, we see his mom, I don't want to say accepting his death, but she's mourning his death, and she's doing it in a traditional way. And Kenny brings in Jade and says, you know, he's going to be staying here for a couple of days. And Jade sees her and he sees the level of emotion that the woman has and realizes he's not in an escape room, that there is something going on here. So the episode ends by transitioning Jade over to reality, as twisted as it is.
I will say, for the first three episodes, they do a great job of the last minute or so.
Yeah.
Of really just a lot of jam-packed stuff in those last 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And then right after, they show the box. But, you know, what I also find funny, not funny, but interesting about that was Kenny brings them to, because it was the choosing day.
And yeah.
Boyd basically forces him to choose. Kenny brings him to the graves. And then he sees his friend, helper, whatever, Toby. Friend, whatever you want to call him, flunky. And he kind of made a joke about the smell. And he's like, no, this is real.
Yeah.
And that's when it really started hitting home to him. And finally, he gets it.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Even though it appeared to be some level of acceptance, I still felt like he wasn't there 100%.
What's interesting about him / the actor was he is great at shifting emotions so quickly.
Yeah.
When he was with those monsters in that basement, that monster with the basement, he's like ready to bawl. And then the next second he's like cracking up. And yeah. I hand it to the actor because, you know, that summer stock was great.
yeah, he caught a lot. But yeah,
I hope that Jade is accepting more than even more than he acted with Kenny's mom.
Yeah.
The other point that I just had, and it was a little point, it's more of a note. I mean, unless you have other points.
Well, we can transition into notes if you want.
You know, the only other note that I had was Kenny and Christy held hands.
Yeah, I made a note about that too. Like, there is something going on with them.
But I don't think he wants the mom to know.
Maybe not. But I mean, he held hands in the diner where his mom is making breakfast.
But when she walked away.
And it was comfort between the two of them to reach out and touch each other like that.
It's pretty amazing because they're pretty much the same age.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, it's not like it's a target-rich environment for each other. So, and they're both kind of leaders in the town.
Yeah.
So it makes sense that they're going to be in close quarters with each other. If a relationship blossoms, it does make sense.
It just kind of makes me wonder how, I don't even know. I just had a thought and it just totally left my head. And it was about Kenny. Oh, well. I mean, I wonder how long they've been there. And I was having this thought earlier about time standing still for people. But if Victor is really that little boy in white, time is obviously not standing still for him. Intellectually, it is. But physically, it's not.
Yeah, oh, I totally get it. I mean, he even says, you know, denial is a not just a river in Egypt. It's a staple with our family.
Yeah,
I know he didn't say those exact words, but I mean, he basically said denial is the backbone of our family.
Yeah,
and that's not a his family thing. That's a lot of families.
Yeah, it is. Well, I mean, you know what? I think that is how people generally get through all phases, all areas, facets, whatever you want to call it, of their lives. There has to be a certain amount of denial that crappy things are happening in order to continue to move forward.
Did you have any other notes?
I don't have a lot of notes. I thought that this was a pretty straightforward episode. It was a little difficult to kind of, I mean, I had my points, but at times I'm like, I don't know. But I do want to talk about what we know so far.
Yeah, I was just about to say the solving the mysteries part.
Yeah. So for the town, Father Cotri basically laid out what we already know. you know, put the talisman by the door, don't open your doors and windows, cover the windows. We all know that. You're in the house by dark. Although
he was trying to do the hard sell.
Yeah, he was. Although when they put Frank in the box, it was already too dark out for them to be outside. You know, let's see. They have to learn to adapt to survive. So that was key. But I have a question. I've noticed it in this house and I've noticed it in other houses. They tie the curtains in knots.
I noticed that too.
And I'm like, why? I'm waiting for that to be explained. Like,
well,
I know
people do tie their curtains in knots.
I know it can be a decor choice. It's not really mine.
Well, that'll be our next episode, decor in from. Yeah. What is good versus bad?
Yeah, exactly.
No, but I did notice that, you know, and it could be just, I wouldn't say it's easier to close the shades, but close them, but it just might be a thing that they might not answer.
Well, yeah, the curtains, because I mean, they can open the curtains and pull up the shades during the day. So just push the curtains aside, lift the shade, and then at nighttime you pull everything down and across, you know?
I'm surprised that they haven't tried to create shutters.
Yeah.
And with locks.
Well, you know what? The box was locked. It didn't matter. They broke in through the sides.
No, I'm just saying, though, as another deterrent for...
It doesn't seem to be a deterrent. I mean, the only way a lock would serve them is if they didn't have the key so that they couldn't be convinced to open it.
But, okay, so this is something that I'm trying to figure out about the creatures.
Okay.
So, the creatures only attack when... for lack of a better term, the person is possessed.
No, I don't think that that's it.
Okay, wait, then just hear me out. Because okay. they when they were in the RV, they tried to get in, they couldn't get in. Okay, fine. They had to be let in. When they were at the porch, they just didn't attack right away.
Right, but they also said they don't run.
Right, they don't run, I guess. Yeah, that's true.
They don't run. One of the things they use is they hypnotize people, or, you know, like the vampire term, they glamour right. them. So they have to convince, you know, if they're on the outside and the person is on the inside, they have to convince that person
to open
to
the
let
door.
Them in.
And once they're in, they're done.
That's it. You know, all they need is that invitation. And if they, you know, before the talismans, if
they would run in,
they didn't have the windows closed or whatever, or if the window was open, they could just come in. I mean, Frank was out in a box with four walls, a roof, and a floor, and they could still get in.
Right.
There was nothing to keep them out. So,
no, and I'm just thinking, like, the people that have seen this whole thing. Are probably saying, Alex, that's so obvious. But after you watch enough of these shows, you start overthinking everything.
Well, yeah.
And you're just trying to make sense of it all. And that's why, you know, you have to go back, do the rewatch like you're doing and other people are doing with us. Yeah. And it's just a lot. But it's all good stuff. Did you have any other mysteries?
Oh, there's still more. So the box is the only form of punishment. So
for both towns, for both communities, I mean.
I don't know. I don't think that anyone in the colony is in Boyd's jurisdiction.
But does the colony have any of their own punishments?
Maybe
we don't know yet.
I mean, they have a whole different way of living. They're just like, we live for the day. You know, whatever happens, happens. Today is all we have. Whereas in the town, they believe that following a strict set of rules will result in their survival, and eventually they'll go home. They'll be alive in order to go home. That's the main difference. And then we already mentioned this. They have cows and chickens, but they don't know where they come from.
I love that line. I just love it.
We don't know where they come from. And that's part of that mystery.
Yes.
Like, they don't know how this whole town really works. They know
what
it does.
They've been there for a while.
Yeah. And they don't know why it works the way it does. As far as the monsters go, if the talisman is up, they have to convince you to let them in. So there's that. But in this episode, we could see through the slats, but we couldn't see a lot of detail. And there was an older guy. We hadn't seen him before. And the best I could say is that he might have been an old ship captain. It looked like he might have been wearing a pea coat.
I'm sorry. I didn't see who it was because I was just too terrified when the guy went through the door. I mean, through the box and scared the shit out of me. And then it cut out. So forgive me for not seeing the old guy.
This was before that happened. And then there was a woman.
Yeah, I do remember seeing the woman
before. But then there was a guy that walked by at a distance by a larger slat in the box. And
yeah, that was a creepy scene that I really don't want to see again. So,
yeah, it was scary because the thing that we noticed, too, is that they change looks because they have an outward appearance of a human. But when they come through,
they're freaky.
Hairless.
Yes.
And they're just they're a humanoid shape and stuff like that. But they aren't wearing clothes. They don't have sexual identifying features that we can see. And they don't have hair.
No, they're kind of like Voldemort slash.
Yeah.
The Death Eaters.
Yeah.
They definitely have that Death Eater vibe.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts of solving mysteries?
That was it.
Okay, great.
That was it.
That said, do you have any news from the sheriff?
No. I don't have any news.
Okay, then we'll
like
just
there's cut. No news going on. Okay. I went looking. It's just kind of quiet.
Well, we have season two, so everything is kind of on hiatus. And
yeah.
So let's get into our listener buzz, and we have one email slash Facebook. Oh, no, it's from this Facebook. So why don't you read that?
This is from Alma Contreras. The opening scene to the episode had me feeling a little uncomfortable. I mean, who just gets it on with people sleeping all around? Duh, Alma, people in the colony house. Obvi. LOL. Although I watched the whole thing already. I'm watching with the podcast to see if y'all can help make heads or tails of some of the stuff going on. Alma, that's why we're coming to you.
Alex, we are here for you.
Yeah. I mean, we go on other websites to figure out what's going on. Not really. I mean, we're doing this for
It's all a mystery to us, and that's why we're all trying to unpack it like a whole bunch of luggage that we brought from wherever.
Yeah, and you know, that's where you guys come in. So anyway, first off, what the heck are those monsters? They seem like ghosts, but they eat you up, leaving behind a shelled carcass. And how exactly do they not run out of food at the diner? One thing is that they have cows and chickens, but they don't know where they come from. All right, and then they grow their own food. So that could be part of it. I mean, it seems like they have a lot of food. If you saw the heaping portions that were had been cooked for breakfast. I like that people get to choose where they want to live. What would y'all choose? Where would you go?
Well,
Alex,
I would love to go to Colony House because it seems like it's fun. But
like your wife won't let you?
No, but then the practical side of me would say, you know, let's go where it's more structured.
Yeah.
I mean, and then if I did have my wife and my kid, I definitely would want to stay in the town just because I don't need to see the quote unquote orgy that I saw in the beginning. And that place is only so big. How many rooms do they have? Like, you know,
I think long timers or the strongest have their own rooms.
Right.
The rest, I think, you know, might sleep in the living room or something like that.
I'm not sleeping in the living room, you know?
Yeah.
Nobody puts baby in the corner.
Or wherever they nod off.
And I don't want to be that guy in the corner and then all of a sudden the window is open and boom.
Yeah.
So I like having my own house, but
yeah.
I just want a better decorator than the last people.
Yeah, exactly. I kind of think that maybe they're thinking, we're not going to be here long. We're either going home or we're going to die. So
what about you? Where would you want to go?
Well, I like to have my privacy, I guess. And I don't want to find out that my back goes straight into my bum. And I don't want anyone else to find that out about me. So I'm not going to be at Colony House. I might go and visit during the day.
See, that's the thing. I want to visit. I just don't want to stay.
Yeah, I want to go home to my own house. So that's where I would go. Let's see. As crazy as Colony House seems, I would probably choose it because I would be scared to live alone with these monsters coming out every night. Dude, I hear ya. So I might become roommates with somebody.
I don't like the dark either. I'm 50 years old and I just don't like the dark.
I'm still scared of the dark.
I lived in a 100-year-old house and brother scared the crap out of me with the poltergeist. I don't like clowns. So
I only like Pennywise.
I don't like any clowns because they're all bad. And you know, the house that I grew up with used to settle when I was a kid.
Yeah.
So it was just creepy. And the fact that I'm watching this is like, I love it. Don't get me wrong, but that last scene scared the crap out of me. I had my hands over my eyes because I knew it was going to happen. So I, you know, but anyway, what else does she have to say?
All right. She says, and that kid in white, a ghost. Oh, that kid in white. And is that kid in white a ghost or a monster?
Yes.
Yes.
I don't have a clue.
Short answer.
And if you do, yes. And I know some of the listeners may know because they watched the whole season. I can't wait to find out. Or it could be like a lost hatch deal where they never say.
Never find out. I love this show. Just leaves you dumbfounded and scared. I look forward to hearing your thoughts.
Well, we love the show too.
Yeah,
and we're dumbfounded and scared. And, you know, hopefully our thoughts have helped you a little bit or made you more confused.
You know, I gotta say, I've been watching The Staircase on HBO Max this week.
Okay.
I've been sleeping with the light on and I don't even know why.
What is that about, by the way?
Oh, it's about that famous true crime story about the woman that falls down the stairs and her husband is on trial for it.
Oh, geez.
No one knows if he did it or not. Like to this day, no one really knows if he did it or not. It could go either way.
Oh,
and
boy.
He's not telling. But like I worked on that show, you know, and but you know, you don't know what you're gonna get until you get it. And it's really good, but it's scaring me. And I've seen ghosts, like I've seen some creepy stuff. So I don't know why this true crime show is scaring me, but it is. All right. So then after this, we have a couple of phone calls, right?
Yes, we do.
One from Steve Brown and one from somebody else.
Greg. We're going to do Greg first. And then let's see what Greg has to say.
Yeah, Greg, what do you have to say?
Hey, guys, this is Greg. Something that between the episode last week or maybe it was this week, I'm not sure which, and something that Alex said struck me. He said that they don't know where all of the cows and chickens come from. That seems almost like if I was feeding pigs, they wouldn't necessarily know where their food came from either. Maybe this is a town, it's a feeding ground for this race or quote unquote monsters or whatever. Maybe they're just like, these are literally just the foodstuffs. And how do we do that? We keep those people fed. And that's something to think about. Perhaps this entire town is just a big pen with a couple of mazes in it that you can't get out of no matter what direction you go, because you are, in fact, the food. All right. Look forward to the podcast.
God. Bye. Greg just scared the crap out of me.
You know what's kind of interesting about that is...
He's absolutely right.
You know, it reminds me of, like, the Star Trek Voyager where they want prey. And that could be what it is. They could be a food source. They could be prey. There could be a whole bunch of things. And I love that take, because if that's the case, that makes a lot of things sensical. You know, it makes a lot of sense. Now.
And you know what kills me? And it's very Lost-like, except it wasn't in the first episode, but it was in the second one where Kenny tells the chess story and he's like, you know, it gets down to the end. There's only three places I can go, and he knows all of them.
Right.
You know, and I lose every time, and I'm like, oh my God, that is no different than Jack saying, well, maybe we're already dead. And I'm like, damn it, I watched for 5 years or 4 years, whatever it was, and they knew all along.
Right.
You know, and that's how they ended it.
That's like the Saint Elsewhere ending.
Yeah. Which I've never seen.
Oh, you've never seen Saint Elsewhere?
Yeah, I never ever watched that show.
Oh, what a great show.
Yeah.
Do you know what happens at the end?
It's in a snow globe, right?
Right. It's the one of the kids, the chief, the head chief, if I remember right, uh-huh. He's really a blue collar worker, and the kid is special needs, and he's looking. It's all in his mind. So,
that's just crazy. How could
they do that? Now we've got one more piece of feedback, and that's from Mr. Steve Brown.
Hey, Alex and Lizzie, sorry about that name mix-up last week. This has been a crazy month for me.
I can't forgive him.
I didn't get a chance to rewatch episode 3, Choosing Day, but I remember it being really a really good episode, just more information about the town and how people, you know, decide where they're going to live. The one thing that bothered me about it was they talked about it being like a permanent decision, like you couldn't change your mind either way. And I just thought that was strange that you would have these people who are, you know, just a day or so traumatized, not knowing what they're doing, and suddenly decide to move. But I think we find out later that there is some movement back and forth occasionally. I think we find that out later in the season, but I don't want to spoil anything. But so I did find the episode was really, really good. And I don't remember all the details, so I can't wait to hear you guys talk about it. Again, apologies for the name mix-up last week. I will talk to you later.
And Steve, don't worry about it. Lizzie has a thick skin, so I think she won't mind. Is that right, Lizzie?
I mind terribly.
I can tell. I'm. We might have to end the podcast forever right now.
Yeah.
No,
Steve.
But he does make a very good point, because you know that could be the rift between Boyd and Ellis. Why is he there?
Yeah.
Versus with his dad. Did he choose to go there versus staying with his dad, or did he move at a later time because there was an incident or something like that?
Yeah.
You know, a lot of questions, even more answers need to be answered. And I think we did a pretty darn good job.
All right. That's our show. Thanks for listening, everybody.
And if you want to write in or leave us some feedback, you can contact us at podcastica.com, or you can always give us a like on our Podcastica Facebook page or on the podcast if you want to leave us a review.
And you know what? While you're there, be sure to check out all the other Podcastica shows, because it's not just this. So, you know, if you're new, you know, if you just found us, and you love, you know, interesting genre shows, check out the other Podcastica shows.
I know they're still doing.
Are they still doing Yellow Jackets?
Well, no, they just finished Yellow Jackets rewatch, but they're doing Ozark.
Yeah,
Rima and Wendy, and then Strange Indeed. Rima, that the bread and butter of Strange Indeed is Stranger Things, which is coming out soon. I know they're Jason's covering Better Call Saul.
Yeah,
and they just did Moon Knight and. You know, we're doing from, so there's a whole bunch of opportunities. And if you have shows that you do like any of the Star Wars stuff on Disney Plus, they've covered that as well. So,
oh God, yeah, Mandalorian,
absolutely, and Loki, and all sorts of good stuff. Yeah. But next week, Lizzie, we're going to be covering episode 4, season 1, Rock and a far Way.
There we go.
There we go. I can't wait to go home. I mean, after this podcast, I'm going to go downstairs. I'm home. I can't wait to go downstairs and watch it right after the podcast. So that's where I'll be.
All right. That's our show.
Thanks for listening. And the bell is ringing, so you better get home before dark.
All right. How much do you hate me?
I don't hate you.